Chapter 10. Malaghurst. He fell through a burning sky. Clouds of fire billowed from horizon to horizon. The ground beneath was broken stone and black baked earth. There was no sun, just the light of an inferno, gleaming and flowing over shattered fortresses and the bones of war machines. Huge serpentine shapes coiled through the fire clouds. Lightning struck from earth to sky and then back, a forest of thunderbolts bleaching the scene to monochrome for the blink of an eye. Malaghurst fell and felt the burning wind sting his skin. His robes were whipping behind him. The demon that wore the shape of Iacton Cruz was just in front of him, close enough to touch. He was not tumbling, he realized. Gravity was not pulling him, and he had a feeling that here its touch was no more real than the skin of his own body. An explosion blossomed far beneath him, the shockwave a kilometer-wide bubble, the mushroom cloud growing up from the burning ground. The roar of the detonation reached up, and the fiery clouds echoed it with thunder.
"Do you hear that?" called the demon. "That is the voice of a god!"
A glistening black sea rushed forwards in the wake of the explosion, flowing over and together, clashing in a red foam. But it was no sea. It was a tide of bodies. Millions of creatures, some running on two legs, some bounding like beasts, their armor scorched black, but their blood running red as it spilled. As he fell lower, he could see machines striding through the press and churning amongst the slaughter, crushing the dead and the living, their guns firing. He recognized the lines of some, Reaver Titans and Baneblade tanks, but others were of designs he had never seen or heard of, vehicles from wars long past or yet to be. He saw a machine shaped like a cut gem pulse, and a wave of cold light shred the armor and flesh of those nearby. He saw a thing with three spindle legs brought down by a blow from an alien creature of chitin and flesh. There were warriors in furs amongst the slaughter, stabbing with rock-tipped spears, slender figures that spun like bladed dreams. Humans in blood and mud-caked uniforms spraying torrents of fire into any that came near. On it went, a slaughter marching to the edge of sight.
"Where is this?"
he called. The demon twisted its head to look back at him.
"Everywhere,"
it said, then stretched out a hand and pointed.
"Look!"
Malaghurst looked. There, on a hill of corpses, stood a figure in black armour. Even from here, with a world of slaughter laid out beneath him, Malaghurst felt his eye drawn to the figure.
"Lubagal,"
he breathed. He watched the War Master swing his mace around him, smashing and breaking as the tide of warriors surged up the slope towards him and were battered back, broken, torn, blood scattering from crushed skulls. A hand of blades, the length of scythes, tore the life from those that came close enough to feel its touch. Bloody ghosts screamed around him, rising from the slain in red-threaded mist. Now that he looked, he saw how the tide of warriors, machines, and fire circled the lone figure, each whirlpool of slaughter a moat in the greater vortex of death. And Horus was not still, somehow. Impossibly he was moving, wading across the ocean of slaughter, blow by blow, step by step. As he watched, a spider-limbed war machine clambered up over the heaped dead towards Horus. Bright green fire lanced from it, blinding and neon bright. The beam struck the howling spirits around the War Master. White light sheeted out. Figures fell, eyes burned from their skulls. For a second, nothing moved. Then Horus walked from the strobing core of light. He was wounded. Even at this distance, Malaghurst could see that. Blood glossed his bare face, and his armor fumed smoke. But on he came. The spider machine halted, staggered. Mandible guns shone with building power. Horus charged. The machine screamed energy. Worldbreaker struck it. Lightning crawled out, freezing the instant in slices of white and black. Metal folded and tore. The machine skittered back, kicking chunks of corpse meat into the air. Porus's second blow struck down, hammering its chrome torso into the ground. The Warmaster waded forwards to meet the tide of battle as it faltered, and more were falling, and his talon was screaming as it pulled the souls of the dead from their flesh.
"You see?" said the demon.
Malachurst looked at it, realizing suddenly that they were no longer falling but hanging in the heat-tortured air.
"You see how he is honored. For others, the Lord of Carnage would send an army. But for him, the Brazen One makes a realm of slaughter spanning all time. Just for him."
Malachurst knew now what he was looking at. In writings that had been shunned even during Old Night, he had read the fever dream impressions of souls who said that they had seen places where battle flowed across lands that never slept, where the ground fumed with the pyre smoke of the fallen, and the dead rose with the rising of red suns to begin the eternal slaughter anew.
"Take me to him,"
he snarled at Amarok. The demon bowed its head, and they descended through the ember-laden wind. Malachurst could feel the heat of fire and explosions, but it was faint, as though it were just a shadow of true flame and a memory of pain. No bullets rose from the Sea of War to greet them, and when they touched the ground, the tide of battle flowed around them. It did not part, Malachurst noticed, but somehow the wild movement of machines and bodies never touched them. Horus loomed above them, his every movement killing. The corona of souls whirled around him, streaked red with the blood of their deaths. Malachurst could feel the presence of the Primarch. It was the same pull he had felt in the throne room, as though he were caught on the edge of a typhoon.
"Sire!"
he shouted, and drew breath to shout again, but Horus looked at him. His face was blood-streaked. There were wounds in his armour, Malachurst saw, and blood in his mouth as he spoke.
"Malachurst,"
he said, the movement of his slaughter continuing without pause.
"You should not be here. I left you."
He heaved the head of Worldbreaker through a press of bronze-armored bodies.
"I left you on Molech. How have you defied my will?" "This is a dream,"
he replied, shouting over the sound of gunfire and the cries of the dying.
"This is a fugue of the warp. You need to come back to us, sire. You need to follow me back." "I will not fail,"
growled Horus, baring bloody teeth.
"I will break this realm of gods. I will make it bow to my will. Go back to Molech. Do not defy this command as you defied me by following me here."
Horus surged forwards, not looking back at Malachurst, as he struck another blow, and blood showered up with shattered splinters of bone.
"Molech was long ago, sire,"
called Malachurst.
"You returned to us. You came back from the realm beyond the door."
"No, he did not," said Amarok.
The demon's voice was quiet, but Malachurst heard it clear through the din of battle. He turned to look at it. The thing with the face of Yactan Cruz shook its head almost sorrowfully.
"He did not return, at least not whole."
"What lies?"
"No lies, twisted one, just cold truths. Truths that should have been obvious to you all."
"You are—"
"I am bound by you," it said. "Command me to speak the truth, and you will hear the same words, Malachurst. Horus remained here, in the land of slaughter. And if we looked, we would see him walking beneath the orchards of decay, and maybe even catch sight of his reflection as he seeks a way out of the Castle of Mirrors. He is the anointed of the gods. He won and claimed the favor of each of them, greater and lesser, from highest power to lowest prince of despair. They poured knowledge and power into him, more than any other champion has received. For such a vessel they have never had before. They raised him up, and they gave him knowledge, insight, power, strength. They whispered that he was all and more than his father was. And he accepted the lie."
"It was no lie," said Malachurst. "He will cast his father down."
"That is not the lie, twisted one. You should know the taste of falsity. He returned to you, but part of him, part of his soul, part of his strength remains here, forever bound to the gods.
He is not here. I am not here. This is a metaphor, a way of seeing something that is happening between him and the warp,
if you like. But it is still real, as is his struggle.
He said he was fighting.
And so he is, fighting the gods that he believed he could make cower.
There is something else, is there not? If he is fighting the gods within his soul, then they are trying to consume him.
A smile flicked over the demon's lips.
Power is a game. A great game without dimensional limit. When the plague winds wax, the fire of war comes and burns the festering corpses from the fields. When excess reaches perfection, wild chance comes to spoil it. On and on in an endless dance.
He has seen and given pact to all the powers,
said Malachurst. But in his thoughts he could see the implications of the demon's words, even while he snarled at it.
He is no pawn in their game.
But he is. Not a pawn, but still a piece to be played with. That is the truth of all power, is it not?
But the warp powers choose the War Master as their ally against the Emperor.
As their tool, not their ally.
The lie, remember? For once, all of the powers of the other realm put that goal above the struggle to gain ascendancy over each other.
Can you understand what a rare event that is? Chaos, some of you name us in your mortal tongue. There is truth in that name, and chaos abhors unity and balance. It thirsts for discord, for battle, for slyness and dissolution. No matter what brings us together, the forces that pull us apart are stronger.
They each want him for themselves, said Malachurst. They know that victory is close and do not want to share the spoils.
He looked at the bloody figure of Horus wading across the eternal battlefield.
They are tearing him apart.
Like children with a toy.
The demon looked in the direction of Horus. He was still moving forwards, but slowing now. Dog-like creatures with six legs and flayed skulls were climbing over each other to bite at him, teeth raising sparks from his armor, their howls shrill above the gunfire.
And as in heaven, so on earth, they are pulling him apart. Just as they are pulling you and your allies apart in the realm of flesh.
Malachurst looked at the demon, his eyes narrowing.
You have seen it, said the demon. All the factions and lies and changes festering in the dark. The gods use many instruments, some knowing, others ignorant, but all serve whether they know what they do or not. Battles fought for pride, festering ambition, desires realized in darkness, all tip the balance one way or another. And all the while, Horus is getting weaker.
You are saying...
The wolves circle, twisted one. Horus is fighting, but he is losing.
Then chaos will have nothing.
Won't it? Said the demon.
Malachurst stared into its fixed, smiling face.
He has to accept it, Malachurst. He has to surrender to be victorious. It is the only way. He has to take the last step. Otherwise they will rip him apart as he struggles and put another in his place.
There is no other, said Malachurst. There could be no other.
Oh, yes, there could. If you want to save him, you have to make him see that he must submit.
You lie,
he breathed.
No, said Amarok. No, I tell you the truth you don't want to hear.
He will not fail,
Malachurst spat, and started after the image of Horus.
And I will not fail him.
The sky blinked to blank red above him. The swirl of warriors and the sound of gunfire and dying was still there, but it seemed to be getting further away.
No!
Shouted Malachurst. The image of Horus was becoming dim, a black swirl of ink in bloody water.
No!
He rounded on the demon.
It seems that the world of flesh calls,
it smirked.
You remember what I said, twisted one?
It said, its voice Yactan Cruz's again.
As in heaven, so on earth, the wolves circle.
Amarok raised its right hand as its image began to fade, the silver coin at the center of the placating palm.
We will speak again. After all, I am with you now and forever.
Brother.
And then it was gone, and pulsing screams were surrounding Malachurst as pain peeled away his body and gave him another one in its place. Air gasped into his lungs. He felt himself choke. Pain shivered through him. The deck was under his bare hands. Frozen blood fell from him. The air was screaming.
Get up!
Shouted a voice nearby.
Get up, you shriveled old bastard, or I'll cut your throat again!
His chest heaved, and he vomited crystallized blood and bile. He touched his neck and found soft flesh where the athame had opened his throat. He pushed up to his feet and staggered.
You have to get out of here now,
said Kalus Ekadon. Behind him, Sota Nul was already at the access hatch.
The Mournaval commanders have called you to the Strategium.
Malachurst blinked. His sight was swimming, the screaming still filling his ears. No, not screaming, alarms. Battle alarms.
Why?
He gasped.
What is happening?
The enemy,
snarled Ekadon.
The Emperor's dogs have found us.
Lyak. The space was a smooth-sided cavern, like the inside of a vast seashell. Bridges of a glossy substance crisscrossed it like the strands of a web. Polished crystals were set in a curved arch at each point where two of the slender bridges met. As tall as a mortal man, the crystals glowed with a pale light. Lightning crackled between them. Where a bridge met the wall of the webway, a curved hole opened into the mist shrouded beyond. Lyak realized that he had run out of one such opening. A narrow bridge projected away from him. Gunfire stitched between the delicate bridges. Red warriors were running forwards, beams of energy and streams of shells flickering from their guns at unseen targets. Lyak's vox shrieked, and then his ears were filled with a clicking rasp like the rubbing of insects' wings. He knew the sound. It was the voice of the unspeaking. Without tongues, they could not speak, but in battle they controlled the crack and hiss of the vox to create a language that billowed like the roar of a dust storm.
Remain,
he called to the blade slaves.
Protect the oracle!
He ran to the middle of a tapered bridge.
Sithraska Hemek,
he breathed. The silver teeth of his mask champed open and closed as the unholy word ripped past them. The sound took shape. Smoke-black sigils tumbled in Lyak's wake, tumbling, dissolving, and reforming. The shapes of feathers and curved claws shivered into ethereal existence. High, hungry cries cracked the air. Lyak's will flowed across the bond to the demons, and they wheeled high above him as a shadow-born murder of crows. His sight filled with the multifaceted vision of the demons. Red smeared the view. His mind absorbed the vision, melding it with that of his true eyes. He saw the enemies that his brothers were firing at then. They burned white in the demon's sight. Plumes whipped behind their tall helms as they spun bladed pole arms. They were golden beings, lightning threading their essence, as though their bodies were sculpted from thunderbolts.
Custodians, thought Lyak. The Emperor's companions and soul-bound warriors.
And before a group of the custodians stood Lorgar. Power haloed him, shimmering, folding light to shadow as blows struck at him, coiling bolts of energy to cords of fire. The red of his armor seemed black amidst the blaze. His bladed scepter was in his hand, its head screaming as it struck. As Lyak watched, a custodian stepped back as the scepter swept past him, then spun and lunged with his spear. The blow sang with killing grace. It never landed. The hurricane of power around Lorgar struck the custodian. For an instant, the arcane craft worked into the warrior's armor flared. Then the custodian was torn apart. Armor became slag, flesh ash, bones black splinters that scattered in the gale. Lorgar had not even broken stride. To many he was a priest, a demagogue who could inspire mortals to deeds that breached the veil of heaven. Lyak had seen it done, had seen his Primarch cow a conquered city to silence, and then raise its voices in praise of the gods. But in that moment, Lyak saw that Lorgar was no priest. He was the killing force of faith given form. A squad of red-armored word-bearers moved after their lord. Silent screams of exultation rattled from their tongueless mouths. Two custodians stood on the bridge before them and their Primarch. They did not flee, though they must have known they would die. Lyak supposed that some would have found that defiance worthy of honor, but for him it deserved only contempt. There was no bravery in them embracing martyrdom. Their souls had been mutilated, stealing the decision of self-sacrifice from them. They fought well, though, moving back, spears spinning in unreadable patterns, firing bolts from their weapons even as they whirled. Lorgar lashed his scepter into a custodian. The golden warrior moved faster than the eye could track, but the spiked head crashed home. Crushed gold and charred flesh scattered from the scepter as it pulled free of the ruin it had wrought. Gunfire lashed down. Explosive rounds hammered into the word-bearers nearest Lorgar. Chewed armor and blood fell from the bridge. Fire and detonations churned the air around the Primarch. A trio of automata had stomped into sight on a bridge above the custodians and the Primarch. Their armor was the red of setting suns, and the marks of the Martian Mechanicum spidered over their armor plates in lines of binaric. They seemed to be suspended from the bridge, hanging by their feet, aiming above their heads with piston-braced batteries of weapons. Except, of course, they were not upside down from their point of view. Lyak yanked the flock of demons into the air between the automata and their targets. Targeting beams flicked towards them, weapons rotated. The winged demons shrieked and tried to twist aside. Lyak's will lashed out, holding them together as they flew into the torrent of gunfire. Bodies of clammy skin and black feathers tore apart. Lyak felt the demons dissolve into nothing and heard their curses as they tumbled back into the depths of the warp. They lasted 7 seconds. But it was enough. Lorgar stepped through the burning air. His eyes had become windows into a realm of fire. He raised a hand. The gesture was slow, the fingers open as though in a blessing. The closest automaton flashed white with heat. Rounds and fuel ignited, pistons melted. It sagged forwards, like a wax doll in the flame of a cutting torch. Lyak was in the middle of a bridge directly beneath the Primarch now. Fire blazed from above him and to his right, punching into the word-bearers trying to reach their Primarch's side. Lyak twisted as another pair of automata walked into place on one of the other bridges. One of the machine's targeting beams found him. Its weapons rotated. Recoil compensators locked into place with a hiss of pistons.
Kina'uk, Lyak spoke.
The word vomited into being, burning towards the automaton as it fired. Heavy rounds met rotting flesh as the demon bloated into reality. 7 wings unfolded from its abdomen. Multifaceted eyes glinted in clusters above a dangling proboscis. Meter-long insect legs dangled from its thorax. Larvae and pus scattered from it as it flew at the automata. Gunfire ripped into it, and rotting fat and bloody meat showered out. The automata unlocked their legs and tried to step into a different firing position. The demon struck the first as it was moving and pitched it backwards. Splinters showered up from the bone-smooth surface of the bridge. The automaton struggled, battle protocols trying to select a course of action. The demon was smothering it, wrapping its legs around it, drooling acid onto it as its proboscis wormed into its torso. The second automaton was still locking in place to fire when the demon dragged itself back into the air and flew at it. Lyak turned away, leaving the demon to its instincts. His eyes found Lorgar. The Primarch was at the center of a storm of smoke and fire. More custodians were on the bridge with him, advancing from both ends behind tall shields as fresh squalls of gunfire converged on him from units emerging onto other bridges. Lorgar paused, the fire of his slaughter rolling back as the air around him shimmered with psychic force. The word-bearers were at his side now, a circle of silent crimson. The custodians were advancing, and for an instant Lyax saw them out of the corner of his eye.
Lord!
He called. Lorgar turned. His skin was taut over his skull. Black veins stood out beneath the dusting of gold. His eyes met Lyax's gaze, then moved back to where the blade slaves sheltered Actea close to the entrance they had emerged from. A beam of vibrating energy struck one of the warriors at Lorgar's side and blasted him into a black dust.
Lord, this is not—
The bridge shattered. Pale splinters showered out, pulled in every direction by conflicting gravities. The custodians fell. Lorgar straightened, eyes closed, his skin sheened with white light. The broken wraithbone halted in midair. Threads of fire grew over them, glowing brighter and brighter until they were like coals pulled from the heart of a furnace. Then they were flying out, scything through automata, battle servitors and custodians, melting armor, kindling fire from oil, cooking flesh to ashes. The wraithbone shattered with each impact, hundreds of smaller shards flying out until the chamber was glowing with what looked like clouds of fire-touched feathers. Shouts and machine cries rose and then became fewer and fewer, until there was just the hiss of wraithbone dust in the wind. Then the cloud became still, a fading blush of heat in the air. Lorgar opened his eyes. The dust fell. Lyak climbed up, following the twists and spirals of the alien bridges. The blade slaves followed him with Actea between them. He reached Lorgar in time to see the Primarch rising from where he had knelt before the broken span. Lyak slowed, bending to look at what remained of the corpses that lay on the smooth ground. He reached down with bare fingers to the pulped matter and dust-ground fragments. Black ectoplasm coated his fingertips.
These were no creatures of the Emperor, he said, and looked up.
Lorgar was looking down at him, the mask of serenity in place on the gold-dusted face once again.
Once they were, said Lorgar.
More ghosts, said Lyak.
Above and around them the web of wraithbone shook.
It is trying to turn us aside, said Actea. This is a confluence chamber. Time and choices branch from here. We are close. They will return, and stronger.
You are our guide, said Lorgar. What is the path we must take?
She opened her mouth and then closed it.
What path? Said Lorgar.
Actea still did not move or speak. Lyak felt his mask twitch on his face. In his mind, fragments of words coiled in his memory. A high, keening noise, like a single cry, pulled from one throat after another, shivered through the air.
Do you hear that?
He asked. Actea twitched her head.
No,
she said.
What do you hear?
He turned and began to move towards the sound. It was coming from the entrance that Lorgar had emerged from. Light flickered within it, shadows moving over the pale walls as though cast by a growing fire.
We came that way, began Lorgar.
Gunfire erupted from across the chamber. Silver mist was pouring into the air from out of the walls, rushing towards them like a closing hand.
Follow him,
shouted Actea, as Lyak began to run towards the beckoning scream in his head. Before him, the suddenly black portal looked back. Volk. The Red Priests waited in a moon made of weapons. Swords, tanks, and the shells of titans lay alongside pistols, live bullets dug from battlefields, axe heads, power field generators, the husks of virus shells, smashed tank turrets, and knives of bronze, iron, and steel. There, too, were conversion projectors, segments of macro cannon barrels, kill shells still warm with radiation from forgotten wars, bladed chains, and lumps of napped flint. all but jumbled and bonded together in an irregular ball that arced through Sarum's outer reaches like a rusting morning star swung at the heavens. Perturabo's gunship had slid into the moon's heart through the mouth of a Nova cannon barrel. The rest of the Iron Warrior's fleet, under Forex's command, surrounded the moon, weapons lit, sensors watching, but hearing only silence. A lone servitor greeted the Primarch as he disembarked. It was an ancient thing, encased in a patchwork of battle-scarred armor. A helmed skull lolled back on its shoulders, its grin visible through the vertical split in the ancient bronze. It had bowed to them with a clatter of bones and a whir of cogs, and then led them into the dark. The walls of the tunnels they walked were the same tangle of weapon components, all fused and beaten into a gleaming unity. Volk did not hear the voices until they were out of sight of the gunship. At first, he thought they were rogue signals on the Vox, but they persisted even after he had shut his communication systems down. They did not speak any language he knew, but he thought he almost understood them. The weapons in his hands ached.
"Hail to Perturabo!"
boomed a voice that echoed from the walls as they stepped into a domed chamber.
"Hail the Lord of Iron!"
Eight figures stood at the center of the chamber. Heavy folds of deep red hung from their spindle frames. The robes were edged with white triangles that resembled the blade of a saw, or teeth. Elongated skulls of black metal sat under the shadow of heavy cowls. Some looked like the flayed heads of horses cast in iron. Others were narrow and vulpine. One was not a head at all, but a circular mouth set with rings of metallic fangs. Volk could see no weapons, but that did not mean that they were not there. He knew they were. When he looked at the figures, it was almost as though he could feel the guns and blades waiting beneath their robes.
"Your coming here is an honor,"
said the voice again. And Volk wondered which of the eight priests was speaking, or if they all were. Perturabo looked at the eight as the iron circles spread in an arc behind him. 20 Terminators lumbered into place behind them, cyclone missile racks locking into position as they halted. Argonis stood level with the Primarch, Volk a pace behind them both.
"Honor," said Perturabo,
letting the word hang in echoes.
"Not honor enough that you would answer my call to feed the hunger of our guns as we starved for the means to make war."
The priests were silent. Red light glinted in the holes of their eyes.
"Sarum stands apart," Argonis had said in the days after they had begun their journey to the Forge World. "They have aided the War Master's allies, but they keep their own counsel. We should not trust them."
"I do not think he intends to trust them," Volk replied, "only to get from them what he needs."
Volk knew why they had come here in their search for Angron. Of all the forces Sarum had come close to favouring with Alliance, it was the World Eaters that enjoyed the closest bond. Angron had subjugated the world, and in the process had resolved a conflict within the priesthood of Sarum. Weaponry and armor had flowed from the forges into the bloody hands of the 12th Legion. Since the war within the Imperium had begun, Sarum had seemed to serve the broad interests of the War Master, but had not come into line with Kelbor Hal's Mechanicum, nor made any sign of serving anyone but itself. They were not trusted, and stood in their presence, Volk could feel why.
"You are welcome, Perturabo,"
said the voice of the priests. Then they began to move, the eight figures spreading to the cardinal points of the chamber.
"You must come with us."
The iron circle locked shields with a boom of hydraulics, weapons armed. Volk felt his weapons twitch in his grasp.
"No," said Perturabo with the smallest shake of his head. "You will give me what I came here for, and then I shall leave."
"You shall have what you seek, though you have not spoken it," said the priests. "You shall receive it and more, but we cannot grant those gifts. You are favored, Lord of Iron and Death. you will see the heart of all, and it shall speak to you.
Argonis opened his mouth to speak, but the echoing voice spoke again before he could.
You, who have passed through the Black Star and sought the weapons of the gods, will find everything that you seek if you follow us.
Volk felt the words settle into his blood. Cold and heat ran through him. He could feel the impulse in his limbs to move, to follow the promise in the words of the Red Priests. It did not feel like desire. It felt like hunger.
You know why I am here, said Perturabo.
Until now, no mention had been made of information on Angron or the 12th Legion. The priest with an equine skull shook its head. The chain teeth rattled in its jaws.
We are the Keepers,
it said, the voice coming from it alone now. It sounded like cogs chewing meat.
We only come to convey you beneath.
Beneath?
Asked Argonis. The iron horse skull turned towards the emissary.
Beneath,
said the priest again.
This is honor above all,
said a priest with the grin of a shark set beneath a red censer band.
Such things are not refused.
Volk was certain that Perturabo would turn away, but the Lord of Iron gave a small nod.
Take us to your revelation, he said.
The priest had frozen for a second, but then nodded in turn. They left the chamber by a door that Volk had not seen when they entered. He was not sure if it was a trick of angle or technology, but until the priests led them towards it, he would have sworn that there was no door. The tunnels they walked became rougher and rougher, the wreckage in the walls jutting out across their path so that they had to step around spear blades and the muzzles of field guns. The air grew hotter, as though they were walking towards a blast furnace or the heart of a volcano. He wondered at Perturabo's words, take us to your revelation, and the shock that had been apparent in the priest's stillness.
There is something at the heart of this realm, said Perturabo, as he walked in front of Volk.
The Primarch glanced back briefly, his black gaze touching Volk's. Then he looked back towards where the escort of priests moved ahead of them.
It is a matter of geometry, really. You can see it in the structures of power the priests create, in the words they speak and leave unsaid. These creatures do not serve the Omnisire of Mars.
Volk looked at the priests and the white teeth at the edge of their robes, which looked black in the low light. Their eyes were coals.
They serve something else, said Perturabo. Something that they have kept secret. Something that speaks in their dreams of guns and blades.
Volk thought he heard a smile in his Primarch's voice. Volk felt his pulse freeze. His sight was blurring at the edges. Something was wrong. Something was very wrong.
We are going to meet it, my son. We are going to see our destiny.
And the priests walking ahead of them turned their heads, necks rotating with a snap of bones and gears. Volk saw red coal eyes and the iron smiles of skulls, and his flesh was burning, and the roar of pain was ripping up through his lips, and he was not walking, but spinning through the void as his fighter shredded around him.
You died, said a voice that sounded just like Perturabo. But you can live again in fire.
And Volk screamed his reply. The passage blinked back into being before him. The priests were walking ahead of them just as they were before. Perturabo strode between the towering bulk of the iron circle, his exoframe purring with each stride. Volk could still feel the heat of his burning flesh melting from him like a fading dream. A faint orange glow was seeping from the distance ahead. A glance behind showed him only blackness. He felt a shiver pass through his armor and body. What was happening to him? What was happening to all of them?
We've lost Vox's contact with the Iron Blood,
called Argonis, stopping, his bolter in his hand. Perturabo halted and looked back at the emissary. Beyond him, the priests had also paused.
The reason that we have lost the link to the fleet, said Perturabo, his voice level,
is that we are out of range of its vox transmitters. The fleet should have coverage into the moon, said Argonis, unless our hosts are jamming it.
Or unless the fleet is now over 1 billion kilometers away from us, said Perturabo.
Argonis began to shake his head.
We have not walked deeper into the moon. We have passed through a doorway. We are walking to the heart of Sarum itself.
Volk heard the words and knew they were true. The Red Priests did not respond, though Volk was certain they had heard the Primarch. Argonis kept his gaze locked on the tunnel in front of them, his expression fixed. The glow in the distance was growing. A blush of red heat had started to creep into the walls. Volk could feel it too. Actually, feel it. Most of his nerves had been burned out by the damage he had sustained and the swift fitting of his augmetics. Sensation was now a sensor-mediated tingle of data. But he could feel the heat. It spread through the servo-sheathed metal of his limbs and breathed into his skin. The priests halted in front of them and turned as one to face Perturabo.
We do not go further, they said,
their single voice coming from every direction.
You go on alone.
Perturabo gave a single shake of his head.
These come with me.
As you wish,
they said and moved aside. Perturabo moved forwards, but Argonis raised his staff of office, the Eye of Horus, barring the Primarch's path.
What have you brought us to? Asked Argonis. Answers, said Perturabo,
and pushed the staff aside as he walked on. Argonis did not move for a second. Volk looked back at him as he followed the Primarch and the Iron Circle. Their eyes met for a long second, metal and crystal to Chthonian black. For a moment, Volk thought he saw something in his brother's eye, a ghost of emotion that he could not read. Then the emissary was following them, and they were walking into the furnace heat, past the bowed heads of the priests. The walls were glowing now, cherry red and coal black. The jumble of weapons had given way to rough stone shot with seams of crystal and flecks of ore. The dust on the passage floor was soft grey ash, thick enough to muffle the tread of the terminators and automata. A low rumbling, like the flow of a great river, was growing as the passage curved before them. Volk felt a sudden urge to turn and go back, but his feet carried him onwards, pistons and meat flowing smoothly as the heat prickled his senses. And then they stepped around a last curve and into the furnace light of Sarum's heart.